I'm Emory Oliver, and this is February the 11th, 2004.
First, would you tell me when you were born?
I was born March the 27th, 1912.
And where were you born?
3 miles north of Somerville.
In your parents' house?
Yep. And anyway, I was born the 27th day of March, and they had a big snowstorm. In them days, they had rail fences, and it blowed the roads in. So the neighbors, they had to take their horses and break track through to Elgin for the doctor to come in his sled to deliver me.
Were you the first child born in that family?
No. The folks had three, and they were all killed in a fire.
What kind of a fire? House fire?
House fire. Yeah.
You know the cause of it?
Well, they thought the kids tipped the lamp over. It was 40 high, and one of my uncles, he went to town, he bought a bunch of fireworks or something and put them up in the cupboard. These kids wanted them, and of course the folks wouldn't let them have them. So anyway, my dad went down to milk the cows or some of the barn, and my mother heard a big crash, running, and the house was on fire. She run out and hollered for him. Kelman, time he got there, why, they got two of the kids out, the other, and they didn't even get out. Burned my hand, my dad's hands real bad. Someone took him to LeGrand, to a doctor. The doctor, he was going to cut his hands off. My dad, he wouldn't let him. And he came back. A new doctor in Elgin then named Kirby, the guy that delivered me. And so anyway, whoever had all him LeGrand, they took him to Elgin. And Kirby, he said, well, he didn't know whether he'd save him or not, but he sure wouldn't cut him off. And he saved his hands all right.
Was that kind of a fire unusual at that time?
Oh, yeah.
It was just a freak incident?
Well, they figured them kids tried to climb up in the cupboard to get these fireworks. And my mother had a kerosene lamp sitting on the table or something, what they used in them days. And the kids upset that. And then after the fire, then I had a brother born 2 years ahead of me, and a sister born 2 years after me.
Now, was it your father's parents who had come to the Grand Ronde Valley?
Yeah, he was born there. Yeah, they came in 1864.
What were his father's parents' names?
Well, my dad's father was Hiram Wesley Oliver. And he always went by Wes. Everybody called him Uncle Wes. But it was kind of funny about these Olivers. They all seemed to go with nicknames and stuff. And them old timers, when they came across the plains, my great-granddad, he came across. He was 61 years old, and his wife was, or 60 years old, and his wife was 59. And they came across the plains, and they're pretty tough old people out there.
Do you know about what year that was?
1864, yeah.
Do you know why they were coming here?
No, they was kind of, they moved around a lot for some reason. And he was born in Indiana. And then they went to Iowa, Iowa. They lived in Iowa, and they came from Iowa here.
Do you think that they were aiming to come to the Grand Ronde Valley? Were they aiming to come from Iowa to the Grand Ronde Valley?
I think they were.
Or were they maybe going to the Willamette Valley?
Well, it was two brothers of my granddad in the train. Joseph Oliver, he stayed over winter because his wife was pregnant. He stayed over winter and then went on to the valley. And Eli Oliver, he went on with the rest of the wagon train to Portland. And then later he moved back and lived over at Pomeroy, Washington. Mm-hmm. He had a farm over there. And
do you think they came through the Grand Ronde on the way to the Willamette?
Oh, yeah.
They did. Mm-hmm.
But my dad, I mean, my granddad and my great-granddad, they stopped off here, and this Joseph Oliver, he stayed all winter, and then he went on. And he got to Portland, and evidently why his kids went to college, and the oldest one, he surveyed and did a lot of work for the big water system in Portland, Bull Run Water System, and he worked for that a lot. And he was a kind of a surveyor, and the one that I was named after, his name was Emery, and he surveyed for railroads, and the first railroad he surveyed was from Pendleton over here somewhere out to Heppner, and he went ahead and surveyed for these railroads, and they had one in California, Feather River Railroad in California. People said nobody could ever survey that, and he did, and I don't know, but I guess he used his money pretty wisely, because I report his come back to me through some of the relatives that he got to be a millionaire, and when he retired, he took his wife for a cruise clear around the world.
Well, the Olivers who stayed here in the Grand Ron Valley, what did they do when they got here?
Well, my granddad, he put in in 1865, he put in a sawmill run with water power.
That was right after he arrived?
The next year.
Yeah. Did he own the land?
Well, he homesteaded a whole bunch of land.
He did homestead?
He homesteaded him. And my great-granddad, he homesteaded some too, right next to it.
Do you by any chance have the papers for the homestead?
No.
The property deeds?
No.
Did you ever hear stories about the procedure they went through to homestead?
No.
Right, well, let's talk about that sawmill. It was near where Dry Creek School was.
Dry Creek School up here. It's up here about a mile and a half.
And what was the stream called?
Well, we always called it Mill Creek. But some of the old government rigs had it Spring Creek. And anyway, I had a fella come along one time and asked me where Spring Creek was. I'd never heard that before, and I said, well, there's one over the other side of the mountain up here.
Yes.
And no, it's right here. He got his map out, but it was always been called Mill Creek as far as ever knew.
Mill Creek at that time must have had a much heavier flow than it does now.
Oh, yeah, a little bit more.
And isn't that fed by Sanderson Springs?
Sanderson Springs, yeah.
Do you have any descriptions from your grandfather of what the creek was like, how full it was, or how fast it flowed?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think he chose to build a sawmill there?
Well, my dad told me that his dad told him that the pine trees wouldn't clear to Somerville up there.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, there's all great big nice pine trees. Yeah. And up where the folks lived, just about half a mile above Dry Creek Schoolhouse. Why, my granddad had a place there where people could camp and everything. He was real religious, and they had church meetings and stuff like that. And he wouldn't cut them trees. And my dad told me that the Indians had camped in there a lot. And each tree had a blaze on the side of it, where the Indians cut in to get the inner bark for their tanning.
For their tanning?
Tanning their hides.
Oh, tanning.
Yeah, for tanning their hides.
Tell me a little about how did that work?
I don't know.
Well, would they boil up the bark and get the juice?
But the Indian trail came right down off over here, but what the people call Two Rock up here.
Uh-huh.
Some people call it Indian Rock. And it came down the mountain there, and one branch of it went toward the Grand, and the other branch come across up there and went right close to where my dad had his place up here. Went to this little park there, my granddad saved. My dad said he could remember that being about 18 inches deep, that trail.
You mean from the wear?
The tear, the horses and stuff going through.
Did he have any direct connections with the Indians, do you think?
Well, when Chief Joseph had his big uprising over Wallow, my granddad told my dad, he said, him and his oldest bunch of family, his first wife died in 1874, I think it was, and then he married another woman, that was what my dad was the youngest one in their family, and he had 10 kids all together, one girl, all the rest boys.
Can we stop for the house you mentioned that your grandfather...
They built two log cabins the first winter they came up here. The road makes a little curve up here, what we call the Fisher Place, where Leroy Smith lives now. Now back, I imagine it back to that spring that comes down in, or not spring, but the creek that comes down in behind there.
And which creek is that?
Well, it runs into Dry Creek.
Does it have a name?
No, I don't think so. It's just part of it runs into what we call Dry Creek. But I don't remember the name for it. Just rigs that come from the mountain up in there.
So he built two log cabins.
They built two log cabins.
How do you think he knew how to do that?
Well, I suppose they built log cabins back where they were in Iowa, back in there, I don't know. But anyway, he had other people with him, and anyway, they built the two log cabins, and the first winter they got in these cabins, and in that one sheet there, will tell you the ones I said to add, and big storm come up, and they couldn't get out in the morning, blowed drifts of the cabin, we were over practically with snow, and they couldn't get out, so they had to let the fire die, they'd build a fireplace in there too, and so they had to let the fire go out, and he had to crawl up the stack out of the fireplace to get out. Got out and shoveled both cabins loose, the doors, so they could get out.
How did you hear about that?
Through my dad and Rebecca.
Okay. Your father told stories that he heard his parents' experiences.
But a while back, he asked me something about the Indians, and that's where we got stopped. And anyway, my dad said that when Joseph had his rig there, he said the women, they went to Somerville to the fort. But him and the boys, they stayed home because he talked like my dad thought he knew Joseph.
Did you say he went to the fort?
Yeah, Somerville. Right there at the north end of Somerville.
I noticed that there's a sign there that says something about a stockade.
Stockade, yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. Anyway, right just east of there, there was an old church there. It was called the Somerville, the Episcopal Methodist Church North. Mm-hmm. And my granddad belonged to the Episcopal.
Methodist
South. And that church is right there in Somerville, close to where the church is now. But anyway, my dad thought he knew him because he said, he knew Joseph or something, and he was a good man. He wouldn't bother anybody. He wouldn't harm anybody.
Think that Joseph came to Somerville?
Oh, I think so. I think they came over here and did
chemist?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
So your father said your grandfather knew Joseph fairly well?
He thought he knew Joseph. My dad thought my granddad knew Joseph.
They always told him to give what they wanted to eat.
And any time the Indians came by, he told his wife to feed him something.
Mm-hmm. A friendship
gesture. Yeah.
Well, could we go back to the sawmill that your grandfather built?
Okay.
He decided on a place right next to Mill Creek. And I suppose you have a picture?
Yeah.
Seen a picture of the mill?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a bunch of pictures down at the tavern in Somerville. I want to go down and show you my pictures.
Was the mill still standing? When you, was the mill still there when you were a child?
No.
It was gone?
Oh, yeah. It went out about 1902, and I had an Uncle Turner. He was the second one of my granddad's kids. And anyway, when the mill went out, he built a big three-story building there. And they made fiber factory.
Out of pine needle.
Pine needle fiber factory. You know where that model is?
Well,
huh?
You do. I certainly want to see it. Later, if you wish.
Well, you better get it while we're here.
Lyle Sanders has told me a little about that pine needle factory. He said that the idea was to make mattresses.
Yeah.
With it?
Made mattresses.
Well, what else do you know about that?
Well, my folks had some when I was a kid, and we slept on. And anyway, why the folks told me in early days, why people that had bed bugs and stuff, why they'd kill them.
Oh.
Said people come along, different, anything I guess they had on them, why that would kill them.
Have you seen any of those mattresses?
Not lately.
Well, did you
see them? When I was a kid, yeah. We slept on them when I was a kid.
Could you describe it?
Well, it was a little bit hard.
Well, but what was it made of? There were pine needles inside. A cloth? Outside.
Yeah, cloth outside. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of had stripes on it, green and white stripes. Like.
How thick?
Oh, they must have been about six inches.
6 inches?
I imagine.
And was it heavy?
Yeah, it was pretty heavy.
Could a child pick it up?
Huh?
Could a child pick it up?
Well, 10-year-old could, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, here's a bottle of pure pine needle oil from the Grand Oregon, from the Oregon Pine Needle Fiber Company. Was that the name of his business?
That's what he called it.
And who ran the business? Your father?
No.
Your grandson?
My uncle.
Your uncle?
Turner Oliver.
I see.
Anyway, he had that a little while. Pretty quick, they found out cotton was a little better than this.
He must have been your father's brother.
Brother, half-brother. Right? He'd been a half-brother to my dad. See, when they came, my granddad had four boys when they came. And then he had two more boys and a girl born here. And then his first wife died. Then he married my granddad a couple of years later, or my grandmother. And he had three with her. And my dad was the youngest one of the whole family.
Did you hear stories about how Turner Oliver got the idea for this pine needle factory?
No.
Obviously, there were lots of pine needles around here.
Oh, yeah. They was pine trees near the Somerville.
Do you think that there had been any other company anywhere else that made mattresses out of pine needles?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Is there any way we could find out?
Huh?
Is there any way we could find out?
I wouldn't have any idea.
Do you think his idea was that he could make a lot of money out of this kind of business?
He thought he'd make money, but he lost money because didn't run long enough. He had a big baler in there, and they had big bales of that, and it was stored in there when I was a kid going to school at Dry Creek. Those kids would go over there. It just north of the Dry Creek school yard, over on the creek, we'd go over there, get that stuff back over, and they had some barns back in that corner where people rode to school on horses and put their horses in. We'd go in them barns and roll some of that up in paper and light a cigar and smoke it. Wonder it didn't kill us.
Do you have any idea how the pine needles were gathered?
Yeah, they had to pick them by hand. They had people out picking them by hand.
You mean gathering them off the ground?
Huh?
Gathering them off the ground?
No, they're getting green.
Right off the
they're
green.
Getting green off the green.
Green ones.
Yeah. Then they took them in, and they had a boiler in there, and they steamed them, and then they run them through a machine that, well, my dad used to use it to pick beans with. We used to use that machine, and you run that by hand, and it went around, had spikes sticking out, and when after we'd raise our dry beans in the air, why, we'd run them through that, and have a canvas out there, and beans in the hill and there, and then we'd get out in the wind and keep pouring them until we got the whole thing blew out of them.
How was that machine used with the pine needles?
Well, they run the pine needles through that, supposed to tear them up a little, I guess.
You mean, well, the pine needles would be about 3 or 4 inches long, wouldn't they?
Oh, no, they'd be 7 or 8 inches.
Oh, they would.
Yeah.
They wanted them shorter?
Huh?
Did they want them to be shorter?
Well, they wanted them busted up. That's the reason they hit them, so after they steamed them, why, they got this juice off them, you know. I need oil. Supposed to cure everything.
So, this bottle of pine needle oil was supposedly a kind of a medicine?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to drink it?
Yeah. Read on there what it's supposed to cure.
For burns, bruises, and cuts, apply externally. Not drink it.
Well,
just rub it on your skin.
Well, there's more on there.
Well, nothing more about how to use it.
And there was something else on there, but they, anyway.
Okay, now I'm beginning to understand.
You can see that just leaked out that much through the ear,
yeah.
Through the cork.
Yeah. I'm beginning to understand the process now. They boil the needles in order to get the oil out, and then that would mash the needles up some.
Yeah.
Is that how they made the fiber?
Yeah, evidently.
Just press them together?
Well, they run them through this machine, and it was, the fiber was
fluff it up, maybe?
Fluffed it up, kind of, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how did they get it inside the cloth bag, you know?
Well, I don't know.
Did they have people just stuff it in by hand?
I don't think they made very many. Here, I think the folks probably bought them some fiber mattress company.
Oh, I'm wondering, how did they get the fiber material inside the bag?
Well, I really never thought of that.
Okay. Sometimes I ask questions that I can't, I know you can't answer.
Well,
do you know where they tried to sell these mattresses?
I think Portland.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Shipped them by train from here?
I imagine, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea how much they asked for them? How much money?
No.
But you said you slept on one.
Oh, yeah. And when I was a kid, folks had 2 or 3 of my kids slept on them.
And it was hard?
Yeah, they were a little hard.
Not as good as duck feathers.
Huh?
Not as good as duck
feathers. Oh, no.
When was the last time you saw one of those when you were a kid? Do you think that any of them might exist anywhere?
I doubt it. I doubt it should be anywhere.
Why did the business quit?
Well, they started to use cotton. Found out they can get cotton cheaper.
Not from around here.
No, not from here. But
and it was also softer, of course.
Huh?
It was also softer.
Oh, yeah.
So do you think the business quit because there wasn't much demand?
Well, when they started using cotton, why then the factories, they'd use cotton, wouldn't use it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
No, Turner lost quite a bit of money, I think, on that mill.
Did they make the mattresses here?
No, I don't
think
so.
I thought they filled it and sent it to
Portland.
Huh? In
bales. They sent bales, yeah. Shipped bales to Portland or somewhere. But when my granddad had the sawmill, he even hauled lumber across the mountains to Walla Walla. So,
by wagon?
And he hauled a lot of lumber to LeGrand for buildings up there.
Was he making 2x4s, do you think?
Oh, he made everything, yeah.
How many men did he have working for him, you suppose?
I have no idea.
Looks like a pretty good-sized crew on the pictures.
Well, we don't have a picture of that crew at that mill. That was another mill.
Oh, okay.
Was that called the Oliver Lumber Sawmill or Lumber
Mill? Oliver Mill.
The Oliver Mill.
There were two or three old barns there just made out of rough lumber.
Were they no longer being used?
Oh, no. Well, some of the kids rode horses down, like Sanderson kids, Virgil Lyle Sanderson. They rode a horse to school.
Tell me a little more from what you know about your grandfather's taking wagon loads of lumber over to Walla Walla.
Well, they built the road up past what they call Ruckle now. In them days, they called that up on top, Summit Prairie, up on top. And anyway, they built that road.
That would be north of Mount Emily, right?
North of Somerville.
Oh, I mean, the road went up into the mountains there,
up over
north of Mount Emily?
Oh, right.
Yeah, right up through there.
Way north.
Anyway, why, I'm going to give you this. Now, that was after this washed out up here.
Well, the envelope that says Woodard Wagon Road Company, Incorporated, Elgin, Oregon, established 1871.
Well, that was this road up here, 71. It took the place of another rig on there. It took the place of another road. Successor to Somerville Walla Walla Wagon Road Company.
And who was Woodard?
Well, Woodard, he was here early days in Somerville. And anyway, why, he finally moved to Tollgate. And he run the Tollgate. And he came out to Elgin to get supplies in the wintertime. And he's pulling a sled or something. And he started back, and he never made it. And they never did find nothing of that sled. Never did find him. It's kind of a mystery of the mountains. After they found out he was gone, why, they hunted for him, but never did find him.
Now, what was your father or your grandfather's role in building the road or rebuilding the road?
Well, he had stock in this road up here.
He had stock in it?
Oh, yeah, he put a lot of money into it to help build it. And so it evidently started in 71 up here. And it worked out in, I think, 83. And they couldn't repair it. It was just too bad, you know, just tore it. They had a big storm. And this Molly McDowell, I remember her. And anyway, she told Parks's that when the had that big storm, they have a lot of snow. And in January, they had a big rain. And it just poured the rain and melted the snow. And she said the water came down, flooded everything down in there. Said water run right through Somerville. You couldn't hardly get down the street to the water run there so bad. Anyway, well, they lived at Tollgate. Or not Tollgate, but up where Ruffle Springs is now. And there was no brush in the trees, just big pine trees and fir trees up there in them days.
Well, what do you know about your grandfather's work on building the road?
Well, he helped. He sent some of his older boys up there to work on it, and it cost him $5,000 to pay his share of the expenses when it washed out. It cost him $5,000, which was quite a bit of money in those days. And this Reinhardt was down here, he had stalked in it. Oh, I don't know.
I'm wondering if you can tell me more about the process of building the road. Did they use the Fresno, for example, with a horse, a scooper that would go along and dig out the bed?
They didn't use a Fresno too much on that. They used just a scraper no more than they did a horse. They had to build a lot of bridges going up the creek up to the...
What would that scraper look like?
Huh?
What did the scraper
look like? It was just a little ring about that wide, I guess. Had a couple of handles on it.
Mm-hmm. A little like a plow?
No, or
a
just...
hand plow?
A lot of them had 8 horses on them. And had 2 wagons behind pulling stuff. In the wintertime, they had...
Two wagons hitched together?
Yeah. Huh? And... time they had to the other side of the mountain, they had to unhook and put stuff on sleds, and then they got down here somewhere where they had to put it back on wagons, but they hauled stuff clear.
So the market in the Grand Ronde Valley for the lumber that your grandfather had sawed wasn't enough to keep him going. He had to go beyond this valley.
Yeah, evidently.
Yes.
Anyway, I read a piece that Turner wrote one time, said when the sawmill come into LeGrand, they had sold all kinds of ties and stuff to the railroad, and the first big rig down by the railroad, LeGrand, was all up in what they call Old Town up there before. And they built a big warehouse down there, and all the lumber was furnished by Oliver Mill here, Turner Road. Of course, that's burned up a long time ago.
What else do you know about what your grandfather did after the sawmill closed?
Well, by that time he was getting pretty old. But before he closed, he put in about 20-acre orchard up on top of the hill. And before that, they told people nothing would grow.
Which hill? Pumpkin Ridge?
Well, on the breaks of it up here.
Okay.
And anyway, he had all kinds of apples and pears and cherries and he raised all kinds of fruit. But,
do you know where he got the stock?
Huh?
Do you know where he got the stock?
No idea.
Couldn't have gotten it around here.
Anyway, he planted, I think there's 24 walnut trees, and after my ma sold the place where Larry Starr bought it, he cut them walnut trees down. All they were big around again. I think they were shipped to Japan, I'm not sure.
Where do you think he would have sold the fruit and the nuts?
Well, them old black walnuts, they weren't fit to eat anyway. Boy, you ever crack one of them?
No, I haven't.
Oh, man, they're hard to crack. They're good eating, but they're an awful job to crack.
Well, what about the apples? Would he have sold those in the valley?
Oh, yeah, he'd get somebody to go with him. He was getting old. He'd get somebody to go with him, and he'd load the hack up with fruit and go to Elgin places. You see, in early days, Somerville was the only town in this end of the valley. It wasn't any Elgin or Ember or anything like that. And it was really quite a little burg here. And it was as big as, Charlie Oswald claimed it was bigger than LeGrand at one time, but I don't know.
Charlie who?
Oswald.
Oswald? Mm-hmm. Was he an old time Somerville?
He was an old time Somerville man. And I remember the old fellow. Anyway, that's when him and his wife had their 60th wedding anniversary, I think, when he told that. He said that Somerville one time was bigger than LeGrand. But Union and Somerville and LeGrand was all about the same size at one time, I think.
Yep.
And there was a settlement over at Cove, too. And
did you ever actually meet your grandfather?
No, he died before I was born.
What were some of the stories about the kind of man he was?
Well, he was a real nice fellow. Everybody liked him.
He must have been a hard worker.
Oh yeah. But everybody said it, you know. They didn't call him his first name. They called him Uncle Wes. Everybody for some reason. And the one that went on to Portland, Joseph, why, they all called him El Caney. That was his middle name. And the one that went over to Eli across the mountain, why, my dad called him Uncle Doc.
Uncle Doc?
Uncle Doc, yeah. Anyway, he was a kind of a preacher in this church. And he'd come over here once in a while, and they'd have, in the schoolhouse, they'd have meetings, but I never did see him either.
Do you know whether your grandfather and your grandmother had any connections with the Hugs?
No, the Hugs didn't come until later. The Hugs were a little later.
Did your father know the Hugs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just Al Hugs on Pumpkin Ridge. I remember Al. Anyway, why? Him and my dad, they were the pitchers for the Somerville team, baseball team. So anyway, they all got in a wagon and went to the Graham to play baseball. And so anyway, the Graham, they got a guy come in, supposed to be a Pacific Coast guy, a home run hitter. Boy, they bragged how they were going to really take Somerville. My dad said he pitched the first four innings or something, or five. The game, and he said he worked like the nickels on this guy, and he got him out every time. So Al went in to pitch, and my dad said when Al pitched, he just ran back. Boy, it just, it almost smoked when it go by. And he could really throw hard. My dad, he was a curveball pitcher. And so anyway, well, come the last inning, and Somerville was one run ahead. So anyway, Grant had the last up, and they got some guy on base, and this guy, he come up, old Al, he threw a couple past him real far like he had before. Anyway, they was all hooping and hollering about the great home run ring. Old Al, he says, well, see if you can hit this, and he just tossed it like that, underhanded it. Boy, the guy, he just waited, put it over the fence. My dad said, boy, they wouldn't even talk to Al coming home. That's so bad at him. Another story told about Al, a whole bunch of them, they went to town to the circus. And anyway, they had a wrestler there at the circus, a bear. And anyway, they said they'd give $10 to anybody to throw the bear off his feet. And of course, they had boxing gloves or something on the bear. But anyway, well, people get a wet bear, and that bear throw him down right quick. So Al says, I can put him down. So he signed up. So the bear was there. Old Al, he just run in right quick and grabbed the bear by the hind feet and hit him with his shoulder, and down the bear went on his back. Well, he cuffed the heck out of Al before they got him pulled off. But anyway, Al got the $10. Anyway, my dad used to laugh about that.
What did your father do when he was a young man?
Well, he worked around some in some of the sawmills, and he ran the ranch. He was a farmer.
Oh, no. Was the, you didn't mention a ranch in connection with your grandfather. Do you know it was the orchard?
Oh, yeah. My granddad had, oh, I imagine close to 300 acres up there altogether. And my great-granddad, he homesteaded 162, I think it was. And it was up where, Sanderson Springs was.
So was your father using some of the land to grow wheat or crops like
that?
Well,
yeah. Wheat, barley.
And what education had he had?
Huh?
what education that he had.
Me?
No, your My father.
Dad? Oh, just grade school here. The first school was right up here, this side of Dry Creek School, half a mile. And just above where Leroy Smith lived, just there's a gravel pit in there. And right in that corner, on that side of the road, was where the first Dry Creek School was. And I guess it was really something.
Was that the name?
Yeah, Dry Creek, number 17 school. And then they finally, in 1885, I guess it was, they built the school where it is now. And anyway, when Turner Oliver, he was at the time, and they'd voted down the money twice for to build a new school. He made Turner mad, and he said, "Damn bunch of people," he said, "you got better places for your hogs to sleep at home than you have here for your kids to go to school in." He was pretty mad now. But anyway, it finally passed. They built that school. And I went to school there, and I made 2 grades the first year. So I went 7 years up there.
Now, I've heard some stories from men maybe about your age who went to Dry Creek School. I think one of them is Duck Slack.
Duck Slack? Yeah.
He has some stories about you.
Who, me?
Yeah, that's what he said, something like that.
Oh, well.
Is that not true?
Oh, I suppose it's true. Duck says so. It have to be. No, I had Duck was behind me in school.
Uh-huh.
He's about 90, I guess, or but anyway,
some of the stories he had about life in that school suggested it was kind of wild.
Well,
a lot of unruly boys.
Well, they had some pretty wild kids there. Like when I was in the eighth grade, the teacher was staying with the folks.
Your folks?
Yeah, with my folks. And anyway, when Duncan and Zach Pugh, they got in
Zach
trouble.
Zach Pugh, yes, I remember that name.
Yeah, anyway, they got in little trouble with the teacher, and she told them they had to stay in that night. They finished soap, and someone comes and he knew something was wrong down there, so he took the gas lantern and went down, give them heck, come home and called up their dads. Anyway, they finally done enough, so she turned them loose. Oh, he was mad.
Yeah. That story checks out with Ducks. Yeah. He told it pretty much the same way.
Yeah. Anyway, but Duck had a brother older than him, Clifford Slack. Then he had a sister.
Tell me a little more about your memories of a typical day at school.
Typical day at school. Well, we used to play Andy and I over a lot, you know, throw a ball up over the over the top of the building, and somebody'd catch it, and then they'd come around one end of the school, try to tag people, you know, when they'd come around there.
What did you call the game?
We called it Andy and I over.
Andy and I over?
Yep.
I think I've heard a slightly different version of it, but Annie, come on over? Something like that? Did you hear that? No? Okay. Was this mainly for boys to play?
Oh, the girls played too, yeah. But you never knew who was coming with the ball, you know, the tag. You see somebody coming, you'd run around the other range, you got by all right, and you didn't, why?
If they tagged you,
you had to go on the other side, okay. See?
And how did you determine who won?
Well, when they finally got so many that they tagged the last guy, that was it. If you were alone on one side, you didn't have a chance. You got them all, they all run the other way.
So the object was to tag as many people as possible?
Yeah, as many as they could tag, you had to go on their side then.
Why was that fun?
Oh, we did a lot of snowballing.
No, I mean, why was that game fun?
Oh, just to be doing something. And us kids us kids up there. Sure, we went to school, we took a baseball glove with us and a bat, and we had baseballs. And boy, we played ball, you know.
Before school, during recess and after school. Tell me what you can remember about a typical day inside the school.
Well, usually the teacher would pick out two or three of the ones in the eighth grade or seventh and have you help the little ones. And we'd that way, why? And anyway, they had
Did you do that?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me exactly what did you do to help the little ones?
Especially in the arithmetic, and you could help them with their reading, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you helped them with your reading, did you have them read something and then you correct them if they couldn't get the word right?
We had a big wood stove in there, and
I've been inside that school, so I can visualize how it was.
Mm-hmm. And anyway, one winter we got a bunch of rocks out and started rocking. Wonder somebody didn't get hurt. But
When the teacher was having you learn history, for example, what did she have you do?
History?
Yeah.
Oh, we had history books.
Yeah. So, did she say, all right, I want you to read pages so-and-so?
Well, she'd assign certain two or three pages, you know.
And then what?
Well, then maybe she'd give you a little test on what you're supposed to read. Maybe she'll have you get up and give it orally and ask questions. But arithmetic was always my real easy grade. From when I went in the Navy, they sent me to trade school. And anyway, these chiefs that was running that, they had mathematics. And I was 28 years old when I went in the service, you know. And so anyway, after a couple of days, I'd just sit down and write the answer out. It was all easy to me. It all come right back to me. Pretty quick, these chiefs come around and says, Oliver, we didn't see we ain't teaching you nothing. You go around and help these guys. So they'd sit and drink coffee, and I'd go around and do their work for them.
So you finished eighth grade at Dry Creek School?
Dry Creek, and then we went to Embler High School.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, my dad bought an old 1926 Ford Touring car. And my older brother, he drove it 2 years, and I drove it a year. I was only 1 year behind him. And my sister, she drove it a couple of years.
In your graduation ceremony?
Out to Embler?
No, at Dry Creek.
No. No, they just give you they gave you a diploma and showed you.
I found that not long ago.
You found that?
You had to take the state exams, didn't you?
Yeah, but the superintendent up at they would come out and visit once or twice a year.
The county superintendent.
Yeah, county superintendent, yeah. I think she was the one that signed the thing when you went in one grade to the next or something.
I've seen copies of some of those exams. They weren't easy.
Weren't easy.
No. You had to know a lot of information. Some of the arithmetic problems difficult to solve. Do you remember having difficulty with those exams?
Here, when my youngest girl was going to school in Ember, they had this new math that they had. Mm-hmm. So anyway, nobody could get that one problem, she said. Teacher told them, just everybody work on that problem tonight. That's got to come out. So she says to me, so I sit down, and it was a little bit of a tough problem, but I worked it all out. And of course, the teacher told him what the answer was. Of course, she didn't tell me, but I worked it got it all worked out, and I told her what it was. She looked, that's right. So I showed her exactly what I'd done. She went to school, nobody had got it. So she got up and put it on the board. This teacher, he went all over it good. He said, that guy's a good mathematician, but it's got to be figured out with this new mathematics. But they never did get that answer with that new mathematics. Never did. They didn't keep that too long.
Did you graduate from Inver High School then?
Inver High School, 1929. Now I got to, you're from LeGrand, so I got to tell you a story. In 1929, Inver out here, we had baseball teams out there for years. We just never got beat in baseball. But we didn't win very many other games. So anyway, the Mormons went around in there where the south end of that lot where the paper is now, the Observer.
Yes.
The Mormons built a gymnasium there.
Yes.
In 1928 they built. So in 29, why, we got to go to that tournament. So anyway, well, wow, they had a real good team that year. And so they had their drawing. Well, Al McGrand drew the first game.
Basketball,
yeah. And so we didn't like McGrand too good, nobody, because they were always much better than us in basketball and stuff. So anyway, we all went up and we rooted for Al. Well, Al beat McGrand. Boy, they was mad at us. So we went ahead. Next game, we played Enterprise. Enterprise beat us. And so when we had dropped down and played LeGrand and what do you call it? Well, they had a guy named Wolf and the two Newland twins, and I don't remember who the other two was, but they never took none of them out. They beat us 70-20, which was terrible in them days. So next spring, when they sent a baseball team out, class baseball, we beat them 23-0. LeGrand knocked off. They didn't have baseball for 10 years. They went right to track. They couldn't take it. We'd have beat them 100-0. We could have. We were a poor fellow.
While you were going to high school, I suppose you had to do farm work.
Oh, yeah.
So how did you have time to practice for sports, basketball and baseball? Had to get home and work.
Well, we had to go back at night and play basketball.
Oh, but that's when your practices mm-hmm. were?
We'd go back at night. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'd come home and go back and practice.
What did you usually have to do?
Baseball, we usually stayed after school and practice that.
What did you... Well, I suppose that was only in the spring, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, baseball in the spring.
In the fall, what did you have to do after school?
We had football. We didn't win the only football game I remember winning when we beat Cole.
Well, were you on the football team too?
Well, for a couple of years now.
Okay. Well, I was thinking that probably your father wanted you at home to do work on the farm.
Oh,
after
no,
school.
No.
No?
No. Maybe I had to milk a cow or something like that.
Well, a lot of farm boys, Claude Anson, for example, could never participate in sports except for track. He always had to walk home and work on the farm right after school. Surprised. Describe a little about your family life, food, and the kind of clothing you got, and the routine around the house.
Well, we used to, folks, they wanted us to go to Sunday school, so we'd walk down to Somerville and go to Sunday school. And then when Sunday school was over, we'd have lunch with us. And we'd go over here to McGlenn McGinsey's and go swimming in the dry creek over there. Of course, we swam some in the nude over there. We didn't have no bathing suits.
That's okay.
Anyway, quite a bunch of them all over there.
Well, let's get back to life inside your house. What were practices like?
Well, folks were good to us, and we had about the same thing. My mother made mush every morning.
Mush. Corn?
No.
Corn mush?
Oatmeal. Oatmeal. Okay. I think she made that every day of her life back in the day. Oh, once in a while we got hot cakes and things.
Yeah.
And she had biscuits every day practically. She made biscuits. And the folks, they'd butcher at least 6 pigs every year. We'd have all kinds of bacon and ham and stuff like that.
And she was cooking on a wood stove?
Yeah, wood stove.
Who had to get up first to get the stove started?
Oh, my dad would do that.
Was it going and all warm by the time you got there?
By the time I got downstairs, let's live upstairs.
What happened after breakfast?
Oh, well, usually what? Usually after breakfast, why we wouldn't do long, then we'd go to school.
You had to walk?
We walked up there. We only had a half mile to walk. And in high school, why we... And then during the high school, we had to stay out there a couple times. Folks had to board us out there.
In Inver. Too much snow.
Yeah. He'd come after us on Friday night with a team and sled or something like that.
Who would you stay with?
Well, we stayed with Mrs. Littrell the first year, and then on with Hattie Wise.
Just living there as though you were part of the family?
Oh, yeah.
That was mother and daughter.
How much, do you know how much that cost?
Oh, about $1 a day.
$1 a day, okay. And then, what did you do for lunch usually?
Well, we took lunch. When we went home, we took lunch to school. I didn't have any. And after I got out of school, when my sister was still in school, they had their first bus. The first bus was an old truck with wooden benches around the outside of it.
An open truck?
Oh, they had a canvas up over the top. And the next one, why, there's a picture of it down in Somerville, a bunch of kids on it. Anyway.
What did your lunch consist of?
Huh?
What was in your lunch?
Oh, mainly a sandwich or two. We didn't get too many bananas.
Pork sandwiches?
Huh?
Pork sandwiches?
A lot of times pork sandwiches. If they happen to have roast, why?
Maybe an apple?
Maybe, yeah. We ate lots of apples.
Mm-hmm. Anything to drink?
Hmm?
Anything to drink?
No. Just drank water, too.
What would dinner consist of?
At home?
Yeah.
Well, usually in the evening, we had a pretty good dinner waiting for us. Mother cooked a pretty good dinner, you know. Maybe she'd have a roast or something like that. And then the next day we'd have roast beef sandwiches.
This was all food you've grown, or
not
did you grown. Buy anything?
Not most of it was homegrown.
Mm-hmm. What time did you go to bed?
Oh, probably 9, 10 o'clock.
What did you do between dinner time and going to bedtime?
Basketball season, why? Went to him to practice. Otherwise.
Otherwise what?
I wouldn't take any books home. You know, you're supposed to take books home to study them. And I didn't like English anyway in school. So I didn't get too good of grades in English. That was my worst grade. So anyway, I forget the name of the book now, but anyway, they had this book. This teacher was going to have us study it for 6 weeks. And so I took it home and just read the book clear through. And I'd sit down and write the answers out there. Boy, Emory says, I sure wish you'd study like that in English all the time. Says, you'd be top grade here for 6 weeks. I never told her. Read it all in But anyway, when I was going to school, remember, when I was a freshman high schooler, boy, they started to build the gymnasium out there, what they call Wade Hall. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, all those boys, we all took agriculture. And the superintendent, he was an agriculture teacher, so he changed our time to go to these classes, either the morning or the afternoons. Part of us in the morning, part in the afternoon. And the other half part of the day, we worked on that gymnasium. And they laid it out, and we dug the trenches, you know, for the cement around. And so I got that done. Why, we helped mix cement, wheel the cement, and got that all in. So they started putting stringers across and different things. We helped them with that. And we laid the subfloor and the siding on the side. We tacked that on. So when they got ready to shingle, we put our basketball shoes on. We went up on top. We'd have races up and down top of that roof. Wonder somebody didn't fall off. Nobody got hurt. But you can just imagine nowadays, they build a building, they wouldn't even let a kid around it.
Right. Who was Wade?
Huh?
Who was Wade?
Well, it was named that. It was a woman named Lucy Wade. She was related to Dick Hibbard. She was an aunt to Dick Hibbard. She was an old maid, and she had quite a bit of money. And she gives $500 or something for the school, for the gymnasium, if they name it Wade Hall.
It's still in use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they wanted to get rid of it. They voted on new grades.